Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
Is South Africa slowly collapsing? It's a question I grapple with often, and I'm often the eternal optimist, but the signs in the cold light of day are extremely worrying. There was a recent report by the South African Institute of Civil Engineering really giving us almost a fail on every single metric when it comes to infrastructure, mostly in state-owned companies like Eskom and Prasa and Transnet. You just have to look around the place to see, certainly in Johannesburg, the collapse of local government infrastructure and roads. Well, Claude de Bassac is CEO of global and country risk advisory firm Unomics. And Claude, welcome. This is something you look at for a day job. Now, it's always good to talk to you. Are we on the brink of state failure?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was thinking about it this morning. I was thinking, you know, this whole BEE thing has fallen flat on its face in a way. And I mean, people are no longer willing to play that game in any case, right, as you say. So what's happening is people are opting out of this economy, whether it's the skills or the capital or the provider of goods and services. They're opting out of this economy because this economy is structurally hollow. It's on the verge of collapse. Yeah. And this is, you know, what our data shows. We are two, three years away from a massive debt crisis. Reason being, the growth forecast on which the budget are systematically being built are overstating growth by 1.2, 1.4% percentage points on average, which means that when you're forecasting 1.8, I just say, well, if I take the average over forecasting of the past 5 years, excluding 2020 and 2021 because they were abnormal, in 2022, we're going to be back on the normal growth curve of the country, which has been going down since 2011. We are going to be at around 0.2, 0.4% in 2022, which is effectively where we are. And I mean, APSA just did a couple forecasts and they're putting it at 0.4 for this coming quarter. So here you have a first quarter, which was what, 1.8%? You have a second quarter, which was -0.7. You have a third quarter, which will be around -0.40. And you're going to have a fourth quarter, which will be maybe better, but I doubt it. I don't see where it's coming from with load shedding and the decline in production in all key sectors. So we're going to be at 0.4% growth this year. But the minister still goes on and still says we're going to be growing at 1.7%. And you're saying, what are you smoking?
Yeah, I mean, and that just, it feeds those explosive debt dynamics, as you say. You know, you're borrowing at an average cost of between 9.5% and 10%. And, you know, your nominal growth is, you know, including inflation here, 7 or 8%. You've got that structural deficit, which is funded through debt, and it keeps on expanding year after year after year because none of the tough decisions are being made.
None of the tough decisions are being made. We continue to say, oh, we wag our fingers at the parastatals every year and saying this is the last. And then we add another 50 billion for them. And then we'll say next February, this is the last, and we'll do it again, because we are politically absolutely obligated to feed these political monsters. And we are ideologically completely opposed to opening up this economy to what remains potentially a faster growing economy if private sector were allowed to go in. But no, we're going to keep this dead man walking called Eskom, and we're going to keep this dead man walking called Transnet, walking for the next 10 years as zombies, sucking all potential growth, and we're going to end up exactly as we ended up in places like Zambia and the DRC and Tanzania and Mozambique with a non-functional third world economy. And the graph I sent you shows you exactly that. It's exactly the story we started telling 10, 15 years ago. It's just gotten worse and worse and worse.
I mean, one does get the sense that we have almost two competing forces, because on the one hand, I think we have to recognize there are some positive reforms in energy, the work being done inside the Operation Vulindlela office inside the presidency. We do see some movement on things capture. And on the other hand, you do get a sense just driving around in Johannesburg, not so much in the Western Cape and Cape Town, but you just drive around, the sense of collapse of local government in the decaying infrastructure. And I think that scares a lot of people, Claude, who feel that South Africa is slowly collapsing.
But it absolutely is the case. But South Africa is not slowly collapsing. South Africa is now collapsing at an accelerating rate. And that's the point of the situation is, you know, this infamous saying, right, Hemingway, how did you go bankrupt? Slowly at first and then suddenly.
Mm.
And this is where we are. As Ernest Hemingway said, right, you know, when one goes bankrupt, it's slowly at first, completely surreptitiously and not paying attention. One simply spends more than one earns. And to make up for that, one borrows. And then one day, everybody comes knocking at the door and everybody asks for their money and their interests at the same time. And then you are suddenly bankrupt and you end up on the streets without your shirt on, which is where South Africa is heading towards. There is simply no scenarios at this point where we can reconcile the notable and appreciated efforts at reinvigorating some of the institutions, independent institutions dealing with this disaster with the public protector's office and obviously the public prosecution and the asset forfeiture unit and all of that. But at the same time, nothing is being done about the police, right? The National Police Service, which is a complete catastrophe and a disaster. And so if you weigh the reforms that are taking place, the opening of the electricity supply sector, reluctantly and nearly 5 years into Ramaphosa's term as president.
Mm.
So what we're seeing is we're seeing measures being taken now at the end of his first term, which should have been taken immediately at the beginning of his first term. You could argue that the pandemic made it worse, but we very well know that the whole New Dawn slogan, not to say brilliant effort of communication propaganda, was dying or dead by 2019. No one believed it anymore.
Old wine in new bottles, one could call
well,
it.
Well, exactly. And I mean,
just recently, Claude, we had, and I just want to come back to this point because I think, and not to belabor it, but we had the president double down in his weekly letter on black economic empowerment. Now, I've spoken to Mteto Anyati, the newly appointed Eskom board member, very capable black business leader, former head of Ultron, turned that business around, former head of MTN South Africa.
Mm.
And as a black business leader, he's allowed to stand up and say, BEE created a parasitic environment where we had middlemen pushing up costs and effectively creating a culture of impunity and corruption inside Eskom. And if we're to turn things around, we actually have to do away with that in terms of our procurement policies. Now, it's what everyone can see quite clearly. Yet again, we have the president defending this policy and no one willing to take the tough political decision to say, we've had 25 years of this kind of policy and this is what it's delivered. Let's try something else.
Look, the evil of apartheid are visiting South Africa over and over again. And black economic empowerment is a case in point. I mean, we have to remember that BEE is not an invention of the ANC. It was a creation of what some calls white monopoly capital, which is an idiotic name for it. But there is no doubt that the very powerful, very wealthy economic actors who were instrumental in the transition from apartheid to democracy sought to capture the ANC and to capture the black elite so that as a guarantor against the greater fear of nationalization. So the idea of taking, well, people like Ramaphosa himself, right, and having a division of labor within the ANC of who would be in government and those who would become the money men, the idea being behind it to create a hedge against the risk of nationalization, to create a wealthy black elite who would understand money, understand capitalism, understand liberalism, understand a modern economy and become advocates of it. That's a white capitalist, South African white capitalist idea. But it's something they lost control of because government said, well, that's a great idea. We're going to regulate it. We're going to make it law. So when you take that and you take the very rapid forced transformation of government, an explosion in the number of government employees without the necessary training, without the necessary experience that took place in the 1990s and 2000s, you end up with what is effectively a small elite, public sector and private sector, of black people who are protected, in fact, from non-performance by their labor unions, by their status as public employees, or by their status as BE partners, and are, the gentle expression is, they're not salary makers, they're salary takers. That is not to say that the experiment with black economic empowerment has entirely failed. Not at all. We can name a lot of South African companies that are majority black that have arisen from not really B, in fact, but transactions, if you think about Exaro and Cerity, for instance, in resource sectors, which are black entrepreneurial companies that have taken opportunity of the fact that the economy opened up and opportunities were created for new actors. That's what is needed, right? So it's not about black versus white here. It's about the true capacity of people, whatever their color, whatever their creed, whatever their classes, to have economic opportunity, to be protected against anti-competitive behavior, and to, in sufficient number that we don't have 16 million people unemployed, millions more not even looking for work, and 25 million people, just about half of the population, under direct monthly check subsidy from the state, because it is simply not tenable, i.e. something is going to have to give. And it is giving. Eskom is non-functioning. It's de facto bankrupt.
And then,
will continue to be so.
And then
Eskom is de facto, Transnet is de facto bankrupt. Sorry, Michael. The private sector is being hobbled. We are crumbling under debt. Now, people will say, oh, but you know, we're only at 75%, 80%, and in 4 years' time, it will get better again when we have growth. But growth based on what?
Nothing.
We don't have electricity, for crying out loud.
That is the bottom line. The fact that this optimism in the medium-term budget policy statement was premised on growth mysteriously and magically appearing from somewhere, when the last couple of years we've been saved largely by forces outside of our control in the commodities boom and bonanza, which padded the impacts of COVID and certainly helped the fiscus raise in excess of 100 billion rand more than anticipated in this financial year.
But
we don't...
100 billion rands in a 5 trillion economy? Yeah. I mean, really. Let's be real. It's not a day of GDP. It's a morning of GDP.
And I want to come back to the risk-taking element in the economy and market forces here. If you juxtapose what happens to a state-owned enterprise that makes the wrong decisions, that doesn't serve its clients in a way that differentiates itself from its competition, that isn't innovating, it's not as if it dies. As you would in the private sector, you would either go into business rescue or liquidation, or you would cease to exist unless you were focused laser-like on being better than your competition or differentiating yourself. Whereas in the state-owned enterprise world, you just get another bailout from taxpayers. And this is where, again, ideologically, the ANC seems married to this idea of using state-owned enterprises as these instruments of the developmental state. But surely that, to your earlier point, has now run its course. You know, the on-balance sheet model.
Let me read something to you that I wrote in 2009 for the ANC, okay? I wrote that in 2009. Let me start reading. Illustratively, SA alone has cost the taxpayer many billions, undermining the country's otherwise dynamic airline industry. It has consistently lost money on one bad strategy after the other, has been mired in corruption and conflict of interest scandals, has failed to establish good labor relations, somewhat contradictory to the notion that state-owned enterprises are better at managing labor, has encountered ever greater commercial difficulties and is becoming an ever greater source of national embarrassment. Admittedly, it has maintained a large labor force, has spread its wings far and wide, and provides much revenue for that other, yet far more effective, monopoly, AXA. However, Ike said, there is no evidence that even larger employment could not have resulted, directly or not, from a combination of alternative views for the money sunk into the airline by government, and that the opportunities created by a civil aviation sector unfettered by an airline repeatedly accused and often found guilty of anti-competitive practices. I say then, second paragraph, yet SA will not be allowed to fail, almost irrespective of how many bailouts government will have to put together. Its management knows that, and so do its employees. Thus, there is very little incentive for them to perform according to a mandate, which is admittedly confusing. Are they there to provide a competitive commercial service, fly the South African flag, provide revenues to AXA, give as much employment as feasible, achieve some uncertain developmental agenda, or all these potentially contradictory and not necessarily welfare positive goals. In the case of the national airline, therefore, it is likely that the developmental state would simply be a justification for a form of corporatism or an unhappy compromise between labor interests, particular interests within government and the ruling elite, and the national interest is maintained at a very high cost to everyone else. So this is nothing new, you know.
And that's 13 years ago, and you could have been reading from the same script that we saw play out this week when Gidon Novik resigned from the Takatso Consortium, and you've got Pravin Gordhan as Minister of DPE just fobbing him off and saying, well, this is, you know, he was conflicted anyway, and, I mean, just making excuse after excuse.
It's absolute bull, you know. I mean, we've seen that in many other African countries well before it happened here. So first, stage one is after national liberation, you have this kind of honeymoon period between the market and the development communities and the national government, and everybody pulls money down the country, and the country borrows money, and then you have a debt crisis, and the parastatals are badly run, and they have to be privatized, right? So then they get privatized, and the World Bank comes in, the IMF comes in, so you have to privatize this because simply you can't afford it. But who do they privatize it to? They privatize it to themselves, right? So the SAA deal, I mean, it stinks, because we don't know who's who behind that particular zoo. And yes, it's absolutely abnormal that the guy who was slated to be the CEO is also involved in another airline. But I mean, that didn't seem to disturb these people until that guy decided to leave, not because being told he can't be part of it, but because he says, I can't take control of an airline. I don't know the conditions, you know, on the deal.
Yep. So 18 months in.
It stinks of state capture number two.
Yeah.
You know, state capture number one is you take control of these institutions and parastatals and you rape and pillage them. State capture number two is, you know, you privatize them to yourselves.
It's the Russian model, as we know.
It is.
What happened with Yeltsin. And, well, we know where that ends up. Claude, we're going to have to leave it there. I'm going to have you back on and we finish this conversation around where South Africa is going and what potentially, if we are to retrieve the situation, needs to be done within this next 2 years. Because increasingly, I'm hearing, even inside government, a two-year window being used as kind of last chance saloon in which to retrieve things. So thanks so much for your time.
Absolutely. It's 2 years or bust. Absolutely. Claude. Our forecasts say that.
Fantastic.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks, Claude. Claude Dubasak, CEO of political and economic risk consultancy, Yonomics Group, here on Classic Business.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.